But for us as Eaton, it's a bigger issue for my colleagues south of the border than it is for us folks here in Canada. And why that is we manufacture the vast majority of the products that we sell in Canada, in Canada.
Welcome to The Flux Capacitor, a podcast about the future of electricity. I'm Francis Bradley of Electricity Canada. This is number 120, episode 120 of The Flux Capacitor. I've been chatting with the industry's business leaders, thought leaders, new market players and stakeholders, the folks that have been pondering the future of how we create, move, trade and use energy, and what the future changes will mean for electricity companies, regulators, society, and customers. I hope these conversations have given you, the listener, a sense of the conversations that are taking place in the sector. My guest on the podcast today is
Chris Blewett, Senior Vice President and General Manager of Eaton Canada.
Chris joined me for a conversation about Eaton, its role in the electricity sector, and in the energy transition. We talk about the company's history from an automotive-focused company to a global power management company, offering products across the electricity value chain transformation with a current focus on energy-efficient, sustainable solutions. Chris emphasizes the importance of understanding customer needs, particularly in the industrial and residential sectors, and we talk inevitably about the impact of geopolitical tensions on supply chains and trade and tariff challenges. We close the conversation with a great book recommendation. Here is my conversation with Chris Blewett, recorded on Zoom in early September 2025. Chris, welcome to the podcast. It's great to have you here. Looking forward to a chat.
Thanks, Francis. It's an absolute pleasure to be here.
Listen, for the listener, why don't we start off with maybe just a description of Eaton and where it fits kind of in the value chain for electricity.
Sure. Thanks for that. So Eaton is a global power management company that provides energy efficient solutions to help customers manage electricity, hydraulics, as well as mechanical power more efficiently, safely, and sustainably. The company was actually founded in 1911 in Cleveland, Ohio, by our founder, Joseph Eaton, and his partner, Viggo Torbensen. And really for the first half century was primarily focused in the automotive sector. And we still are heavily involved in that sector today. However, through a number of acquisitions, you know, with some notable names like Cutler Hammer, Westinghouse, right, Powerware, Cooper, and a number of other acquisitions, plus organic growth, Eaton has kind of transformed itself into one of the premier electrical service and solutions provider in the world today. In the electrical space, we offer multiple solutions and services at various points in the electricity value chain, starting right from the power generation side through the transmission and distribution side, right down to the end user side of the equation as well. You know, and our whole focus is really around enhancing reliability, efficiency to those electrical systems.
That's quite a transformation when you think about it. But like the company originally founded, if my memory serves me correctly, I think it was gears in
automotive. Absolutely. It was axles. They started off with truck axles back in the day. But I think it also kind of just pinpoints to the ingenuity of our founders, where they're always looking for where is the world going and right, where do they see the market heading, and they always wanted to be on that cutting edge, and hence the reason why they saw the world leading to what we're kind of seeing today in electrification. They recognized that was where the market was going, and they wanted to be a significant player in that space.
Right, right. So listen, I want to chat a little bit about where the world is going kind of from here forward. I think that would be interesting to get the perspective from you, given, you know, where the company sits. And also, you know, the fact that you're involved in so many markets around the world. But before we get to that, something I ask folks that come on the podcast, Chris, when you were a kid, is this what you always dreamed of doing? What was your journey from the playground to your role today at Eaton?
Well, the typical boy on the playground had no idea what he wanted to do. His whole focus was playing hockey and hanging out with his friends back in the day. But as I started to mature, I definitely enjoyed working with my hands and technology. So, that's what led me to go through kind of the engineering stream. And I started my career as a field engineer, right? And I never thought or saw myself being a leader within this type of organization, but did I see myself at an early age in high school and in university being in the electrical field? Absolutely, I did. It
Oh, wow.
was a field that really interested me. My father was actually worked for OPG for a number of years, so I had a little bit of an understanding, of that space, but it was in a field that really interested me.
Wow, okay. So you're not the first multi-generational kind of
No, I'm
person
not. I'm
in
not.
this sector that I've had on the podcast. I always find that interesting. All right, so let's get back to Eaton. One of the things that I've noticed in the in your kind of web presence of the company, there is a pretty clear focus articulated really from the customer perspective, but almost the customer's customer perspective, where you're talking about as a company talking about improving the lives of people. So that sort of goes like two steps from the electricity companies that you service and help, and to reach out to their customers. Is that something that's kind of a part of, because you talked about the founders of the company, is this something that's always been a focus? Because it does seem to be, I think, a little bit progressive in terms of thinking of your customers' customers.
Absolutely. And if you sit there and think that a big chunk of our products typically flow through distribution, right, to a contractor or a general and then to an end user, if we're going to be that relevant player in the space, the one that is leading the thought process and the one that is coming up with the new innovation, you have to have that connection and that touch point with your end customer. And the person who, at the end of the day, is truly the one that's going to live with, your products and your solutions. So it is a fundamental core of how we go to market, how we develop our products. And whether that's talking and dealing with more industrial type of applications and having that relationship right with the industrial, trying to understand what their issues are and their problems are, or a utility and trying to understand how we can be better serve them, or even directly with a homeowner. Right at the end of the day, as we also sell a significant amount of residential products, understanding what it is that a homeowner is looking for at the end of the day, around electricity, it is important for us to make sure that we're providing the products that really resonate and provide the solutions our customer base is looking for.
Okay, well, that last one I'm not maybe not as familiar with, supplying product directly to customers and homeowners. Where are you in that segment?
So we sell everything from residential load centers to wall switches to EV charging. All of those products are products that Eaton does manufacture, along with obviously our big electrical products as well, right? And the whole idea of integrating all of those products into a smart solution for a customer is something that we're really primarily focused on right now. We recognize that, as much as the electrification is around trying to be more energy efficient and more reliable, it is also about being more intelligent too. And that is a significant focus for us in that homeowner space about making it more intelligent, making your home more more user friendly and connected at the end of the day.
So it's not just product that you're bringing forward, you're bringing integration, you're
Absolutely.
bringing it sounds like you're trying to bring forward kind of integrated solutions.
Yeah, and I think the key word there is a lot of times people look at manufacturers like ourselves and our peer group as just manufacturers. And that couldn't be further from the truth. I mean, a significant portion of our business is really around integration. And that starts by understanding what is a customer looking for. And hey, part of the solution is an actual product that we manufacture. But part of that solution is much integrating it and making it work for the customer and really doing what they're looking for.
So what is the customer looking for? And again, one of the other things that I did see in kind of looking at some of the materials around the company is a pretty clear identification of the environment and energy transition as being something that is core to what Eaton is bringing forward. Can you maybe, for the listener, talk a little bit about how does that manifest itself? So what does that mean, given the kind of solutions you're bringing forward? How does this focus on an understanding of we're in an energy transition environment, and environment is part of the conversation? So what does that look like for you and for the company?
I will first say this, when we talk about it from that customer's perspective, I think it's different based upon every customer.
Okay.
And so let's first talk about when you're talking about a remote indigenous community, it is about more reliable, cheaper energy sources, right? When you're talking about an industrial, at times it's more about meeting ESG goals, or it's about creating efficiencies in their system, cost out, that type of thing. When you're talking utilities, a lot of times it's around reliability and making sure that you create that resiliency within in your networks. And I think that's the key thing that us as Eaton are really trying to focus in on is we have solutions that can be applied in multiple different ways depending on what the customer is specifically looking for.
Right.
So if we're looking at a distributed energy resource, that could be applied into the application that we're talking about for an indigenous community. That could be applied in the application that we're talking about for a utility as well as for an industrial application. And that is really our true focus, is making sure that is making our products a core setup, but then being able to really apply them to the application that a customer is specifically looking for.
Right. Hey, one of the things that I did want to chat about as well was be interested to kind of get your views on supply chains and the complexity of supply chains. And I'm just thinking back, not like I think it would be fun to talk a little bit about the current trade environment, and maybe we can get to that. But more just a more fundamental question. I mean, I remember a couple of years ago when a ship got caught sideways in the Suez Canal, and it
Very well
screwed up.
aware, we had a lot of containers on that ship,
Did
actually.
you? Okay. Well, that's
Yes.
what I was interested in was kind of getting your sense about the complexity of global supply chains, and when a ship gets caught sideways in the Suez Canal, and as you say, you had equipment in some of those containers. Like, what is that? What did that do? And how concerned should we be about the seemingly increasingly interdependent and complex nature of our global supply chains?
There's a couple things I think we need to look at when we look at supply chain. I think we were, pre-COVID and the whole as that whole issue kind of started around supply chain, we were a little naive. And there was a real focus in the industry around single source and get it as cost efficient as you possibly can. And I think one of the reflections most of us in the industry had coming out of that is, that's maybe not the smartest play if you're looking at trying to maintain, some resiliency in your supply chain infrastructure. So I know us as Eaton really started to focus in on, well, can we create redundancy? Obviously, we don't want to have, thousands of vendors providing us the same, but we need to make sure we have some redundancy. The second thing that kind of came out of it too is recognizing that different regional jurisdictions and geopolitics have a significant play in our supply chain, and making sure that we have reliable sources for our material to make sure that we can keep up with demand that our customers are looking for. Now, I will say this, there was a lot of perspective in the electrical industry, and we had many conversations with our customers around this, that it was all tied, our supply chain woes were all really tied to the issues that kind of stemmed from COVID. And yes, a portion of that really did have come from that. But I think the other factor is as we came out of COVID and as we started to enter this whole electrification stage, the demand for electrical products and what I consider chipsets, steel, all of that stuff increased exponentially way more than what we saw pre-COVID. And our whole world was not really ready for that. right? And it took a little bit for our whole world to kind of get set up and ready to be able to handle that, whether that's copper, chipsets, all of that stuff. It took some while to not only just get that resiliency back, but then to be able to ramp up the capacity to keep pace with that new demand that we're seeing. Mm-hmm.
So it's a combination of both the pent up demand from COVID, absolutely. And then it sounds like you're talking about kind of almost like a quantum change in terms of what the demand curve now looks like.
Yeah, absolutely. If I sit there and think about our volumes that we are producing now versus 2019, it's not your standard GDP growth. Like the electrical space as a whole has had some step level growth. Far exceeding a lot of what the other sectors we're seeing in the country.
Right. Okay. Well, then let's get back to something you said early on, and that was, the founders of the company were really good at kind of having a sense of where the world was going, and moved from axles to lots of other products. So in that context, I mean, if we kind of look at the change in terms of our business post COVID, with with the growth of electrifications and growth of data centers and AI coming on, what's the future going to look like? I mean, we're this is not a blip, right? We're now on a completely different path, aren't we?
Yeah, and I think the first thing that everybody needs to realize, why is this happening? And yes, part of it is around being more environmentally friendly, but at the end of the day, it is about cost and control. And it is a cheaper way to be able to get energy that we're looking for in whatever form. So if you look at that from our, us as a manufacturer of these products, the focus is on how can I get more power with less cost. And there's a significant, whether it's in the data center space, being able to look at getting more power to the rack to be able to, to get more computing power, or if it's around, in a utility space, how do I get less losses, through transformers or line losses, all that. There is an effort to try to be able to do it bigger, faster, stronger, cheaper.
Yeah.
And I'd say that's a big focus for us. If I look at where we've, put investments as an organization, it is focused around, solid state technology, whether that's solid state breakers, getting away from just simple mechanical infrastructure, but going more to solid state, higher power solid state. Okay. Or even, we just did an acquisition just actually a couple of weeks ago of a company called Resilient Power. The reason for that acquisition is they've made significant inroads in solid state transformers. And we recognize that actually has a significant decrease in footprint and higher power optimization that would have significant impact in the data center space. So that is where I see the world going. And don't get me wrong, you got to remember that this electrical industry, breaker technology and transformer technology, for all intents and purposes, really hasn't changed since the days of its invention.
Yeah.
We're on that curve now where we are seeing it. And it started with the lighting space and the whole, transformation from incandescent to LED. And it's now working its way into the actual, the electrical products themselves.
Interesting. So, when you're, talking to a potential new client and talking about the future, are there kind of specific examples of what that future looks like that you point to say, to understand what the future looks like, we need to, take a look at this particular case study, for example?
Let me just say that when we're talking to a client, the key thing that we're always trying to understand is where is your future, right? And then what we want to do is, because let's remember that most of our clients that buy electricity, they're not focused on electricity. They're focused on making cars. They're focused on data. They're focused on whatever. And the key element to dealing with a customer is, what is it and where is your business going? And let me look at the electrical solutions that can help you get there and be more efficient, more powerful for your organization. That's typically, Francis, what we kind of lead to a customer. And then, hey, in the background, hey, that's where, so for example, in the data center space right now, we are having a lot of conversations with the data center world. It is a significant portion of our business. And they have been very clear on the importance and the need that with AI technologies, they need more computing power right at the server and at the rack. So how do we do that? How do we get more electricity and power at the rack? There's heating issues that come with that. The more energy you put in a small space, you've got heating concerns. How do we deal with that, right? How do you put, they want to put these data centers in geographies and smaller footprints. How do you handle that smaller footprint space versus what we traditionally have seen as big electrical components in you know, large yards or in big buildings or big rooms? It's understanding what the customer really wants first, and then us as an organization working to make sure that we fit the need from a power and an energy perspective that they're looking for. Because at the end of the day, most people in this world aren't looking at the electricity. They're looking at what the electricity actually does for them, right? And what we want them to be able to do is be able to not worry about the electricity, focus on what they do best.
Yeah. So you must spend a fair amount of time focusing on understanding the markets of your customers' customers.
Oh, 100%. And that's kind of where, you know, where you kind of led us at the very beginning. Absolutely, yeah. We spend a significant amount of time. It is a big element of our, you know, our various business unit owners. It is about our engineering space. You know, it is, you know, with our marketing organizations, it is a significant focus of what we spend our time on. Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. So any insights just for the listener in terms of some of the kind of big trends that you see for customers? We, you know, we talked a little bit about data centers. Everybody's predicting that growth is going to be off the charts. We're going to see hyperscalers coming in. Are there other segments that you're looking at and saying we need to be aware that this is likely to change? Either we're going to see more growth or we're going to see, you know, less in some of those segments.
Yeah, there's two I would call out, Francis. The first is the industrial space, and right now, obviously, with, you know, tariffs and that uncertainty that we see there, it's kind of stalled. But don't kid yourself. The country that we live in is mineral rich. We're one of the, you know, the most mineral dense countries in the world. And we're a first world nation, part of NATO, you know, and a very safe and reliable country. We are going to be one of the key players for mining and minerals as we move forward. So as we look at that from an electrification perspective, that's a significant opportunity, right? Whether it's electric mining vehicles, movable dirt applications so that they can move them to various places within the mines, there's a significant amount of opportunity, even just from a safety perspective. In the electrical space, there is a significant amount of opportunity in that industrial mining application. So I'd say that's kind of the first one that I'd call it. The other side of it, too, is even just in the refining of some of these minerals, right? I don't see Canada ever becoming a massive manufacturing player. We just don't have the population density for that. Don't get me wrong. I would love to see that, and I hope that we still work to be able to grow that. But it is going to be about providing those raw minerals and or refined products that, you know, whether that's steel, oil and gas, that type of stuff that can be able to provide to the manufacturing space. So that whole refining aspect or milling aspect, I see as a significant opportunity as well. And when you look at those areas, they're all looking for how can I do it more efficiently? How can I be more energy efficient? And if I sit there and think, some of our biggest clients around electrification tend to be in that energy space. And one would think, wait a minute, like a Suncor or a Husky or these big oil companies, that they would be the players to kind of focus on electrification. Don't kid yourself, they absolutely are. Why? Because it's about cost savings and looking at ways to be more efficient in their space. So that industrial space is absolutely an area that I see significant growth and opportunity. The other is in the residential space. And And the reason why I call out that residential space is even though we've seen housing starts drop here over the little bit, and I think that has a lot to do with, just as I said earlier, just some of the geopolitical tensions that we've got at the moment, we still fundamentally have a housing crisis in this country where we right. have more demand than we actually have houses to put people in. And what that leads to is not only just, you know, the demand for the basic housing requirements, but it also demands innovation, because as you're building these new houses, people who are buying these houses are looking for that innovation. They're looking for that connectedness. They're looking for those ways that, for it to be more of a smart type of home. And that is an opportunity for us as well, for an advancement and a significant opportunity.
Okay. One of the things we've kind of skirted around, and maybe we just take a moment and actually dive right in, is tariffs. And, you know, as you noted, the geopolitical situation that we're in, we're in a particularly at times challenging point in time, just trying to understand what what the current play is and what the future may hold for us. So for the listener, we're recording this in early September. So I think the news just came out yesterday that the U.S. administration is going to appeal to the Supreme Court on the ruling in IEEPA tariffs and so on. So just trying to follow where that bouncing ball is going. But like how much is the geopolitical situation and also the tariff and trade situation, how much concern is that causing you and your colleagues? And, you know, is this, you know, as you said, hopefully the some of this is a temporary thing, because there are some clear fundamentals with respect to the Canadian economy and our resources. But how big a challenge is this, and how closely should we be paying attention to these issues?
So I'll talk first as Eaton, all right, and then I'll kind of talk a little bit beyond Eaton. But for us as Eaton, it's a bigger issue for my colleagues south of the border than it is for us folks here in Canada. And why that is we manufacture the vast majority of the products that we sell in Canada. So the tariff impact for us, yes, there's components at times and some odd parts and pieces, but for all intents and purposes, the tariff impact that we're having on our products is minimal at the present moment. As you mentioned, who knows what'll change, change in the next minute type of thing. But for all intents and purposes, it is not as large of an impact for us as Eaton here in Canada, just because we manufacture. And that is a key fundamental thing for our organization. We are very much about being a global company and recognizing the resources that help us to be global, you know, to be more innovative, to, you know, leverage that side. But the importance of being local and being resonating to your marketplace. So part of that is manufacturing local, having local sales organizations, having local services organizations, local engineering organizations that are focused in that market and in that geography. So because of that, this has really kind of helped us to kind of manage this a little bit easier. And that's why I say for our folks south of the border, it is a bigger hit for them, because a lot of the raw materials that they are getting do come from outside places that right now are being hit significantly with tariffs. Copper, for example, mm-hmm. aluminum, steel, those types of things. Those have had significant impacts to the manufacturing space in the U.S. Now, if I talk to kind of our counterparts, or not counterparts, but just to the industry as a whole, obviously, this is not a good thing. I mean, if anybody's reading the news lately, you know, they're talking that we're in that recessionary, you know, type of period or close to it. And it is a direct reflection of, you know, of the tariff impact. You know, when you look at our customer bases, whether they're the steel providers or the copper miners or the, you know, anybody that is actually providing materials south of the border that is dealing with this. In fact, we do a significant business with the softwood lumber industry as well, and that has had significant impact.
Right.
That has had issues. And this is why I say this whole period of ambiguity is not a good thing for our economy. And if there's one thing that I would, you know, really try to promote to our, you know, to our politicians and to our governments is working to try and stabilize this and get a sense of normalcy is what, you know, business and industry is looking for. This ambiguity is causing us to pause, slow down, and not maybe move the way we should be moving. So any way that we can get to a sense of understanding of where the future is and what that normal is going to eventually look like is just going to help, you know, businesses get on with our lives and start to figure out and move forward to where, you know, whatever that new normal actually becomes. But I will say this, I say this, and this could completely change tomorrow. I don't believe we're going to be in an era without tariffs for quite some time. I believe this is going to be an element of what we're dealing with over the next number of years.
Yeah, and you're not the first person to suggest that. So yeah, I think we're starting to see a pretty strong consensus that tariffs are going to be a feature for certainly the foreseeable future in one shape or another. The question will be, at what level and levied against whom?
And exactly. You know, and then, like I said, that's the problem for a lot of businesses right now is until they have knowledge and understanding of what that's going to be, they're not willing to put the capital investment into the next phase of growth that really our economy needs and is looking for.
Right, right. Listen, Chris, it's been terrific to chat, but I can't let you go without getting your book recommendation. We pulled together the book recommendations on the podcast, put them on a list as our Flux Capacitor, our book club list, and it also feeds my reading list as well. So I think now I've gone through probably more than half of the books that have been recommended on the podcast. So today, what book should we be looking to add to our reading list?
All right, I'm going to give you a book called Dare to Lead by Brené Brown. All right, and I had the opportunity actually a number of months ago, along with a number of my colleagues at Eaton, to spend a week with the author Brené Brown, where she kind of guided us and helped us through a week's long session around how does an organization like Eaton, you know, lead through these dynamic and dramatic changes that we're kind of seeing in the electrical world today, right? And this particular book really resonated with me, and it's really kind of based upon Brené's 20 years of behavioral research at the University of Texas, emphasizing vulnerability, courage, authenticity, over kind of armor and protection. Or perfectionism, sorry, I meant to say perfectionism. Mm-hmm. But by focus on vulnerability and courage and authenticity, we can really see that leaders can foster a team culture that promotes, you know, taking educated risks, learning from failure, and how do you have those tough conversations in a positive way? Right. Like I said, the book really resonated with me, and it's actually been a kind of helped me guide and change a little bit of my leadership style over the last number of months. And I definitely have seen some nice results from that. Let me just say that, Francis.
All right. Okay. Well, what a great recommendation. So the book is Dare to Lead. And I see this, there's a subtitle, Developing Brave Leaders and Courageous Cultures by Brené Brown. Chris, thanks for a terrific recommendation for the books. And thank you for taking the time to join the podcast. It was interesting to drill down on some of these issues. We're living in interesting times, my friend.
Absolutely. And Francis, thank you very much. This was an absolute pleasure.
Thanks. Take care.
All right. Take care.
For those that have been with the podcast since the beginning and those that have joined along the way, thanks for listening. Please take the time to rate the podcast on whatever platform you use to listen, and let me know what you think of the Flux Capacitor. You can find me on Instagram as TheBradBradley, on Blue Sky as @FrancisBradley, on LinkedIn and through our website at electricity.ca. The website for this pod is thefluxcapacitor.ca, and it includes links for this episode on the show page, this being episode 120. And while you're there, check out the book club page, which provides info on and links to the books which have been recommended by guests on the Flux Capacitor, including Chris's recommendation, Dare to Lead, Brave Work, Tough Conversations, Whole Hearts, by Brené Brown. And let's continue the electricity conversation on our Facebook page, on Instagram, and at electricity.ca.